pandemic has changed humans' relationship with nature, maybe just as complex. But for now, these positive changes may be enough to give some people and Mother Nature the hope of a better future. It may also help illuminate flaws in how humans interact with and value nature, which could have long-lasting, permanent repercussions for humans and the environment alike.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 75 and cloudy. Tonight, a few showers with a low in the low 70s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 80s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 10 a.m.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Independent Living, and I'm your reader, Leslie, with the Audio Reading Service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from several health newsletters. The first one is from Tufts University, Health and Nutrition Letter. And the first article, Healthy Takeout. Turn up the nutrition and make your takeout choices healthier using these simple tips and tricks. We're taking out food more than ever these days. More than 65% of us are regularly ordering meals out, according to the National Restaurant Association. Getting food to go can be a bit of a challenge when you're trying to eat healthy. A recent Tufts University study found that 50% of meals consumed by Americans from full-service restaurants and 70% from fast food and quick serve restaurants were of poor nutritional quality. But healthier options are possible. You can dial up the nutrition without compromising on flavor and satisfaction with just a few simple modifications. Give these tips and tricks a try to help make your next takeout meal healthier. The first thing is go for plants. Eating more minimally processed foods, plant foods, fruits, nuts, seeds, vegetables, beans, whole grains, and plant oils is linked to better health. As an added bonus, the potassium in plant foods may counteract the blood pressure raising effect of sodium. So try this. Look for plant forward choices like green salads, bean and veggie dishes, fruit plates, whole grain bowls, and vegetarian options. Most restaurants will allow you to swap a fruit cup or non-starchy vegetables for less healthy sides like home fries, French fries, rice pilaf, or onion rings. You can order extra veggies or add some from your fridge or freezer at home and double up on the lettuce, tomato, onion, avocado, and peppers if you choose to get a sandwich or burger. Don't overlook dishes from different cuisines like Asian tofu dishes, Mediterranean falafel platters, and Indian dal or lentils to boost plant food intake. Another trick is to don't overdo the starches. High intake of refined grains and starchy vegetables like white rice, white pasta, skinless white potato products, peas, corn, and many breakfast cereals, breads, rolls, and crackers that are not whole grain is associated with negative health effects. At least half your grains should be whole grains. Try this instead. Request whole grain options and substitutions like brown rice and whole grain pastas and breads. Reduce portions of dishes that are heavy on refined grains and other starches, like mounds of fries, pasta, rice, or white bread. Watch out for common double-carb pairings like pizza and breadsticks, sandwiches or burgers with fries, or a dinner roll or other bread served alongside rice, pasta, or potatoes. Another tip is to skip processed meat. Evidence has consistently shown a link between consuming processed meats like pepperoni, ham, sausage, bacon, and deli turkey, and diabetes, stroke, heart disease, cancer, and premature death. So here instead, try this. Order seafood, plant-based proteins, or unprocessed poultry or red meat over processed meat. Embrace the abundance of better-for-you fish and seafood options, or give a healthy plant-based option a try. Something completely different could become your new favorite. Look for options that are steamed, baked, broiled, grilled, or roasted rather than breaded and deep-fried, or served with heavy cream or butter sauces. Be wary of items described on menus such as fried, crispy, creamy, smothered, au gratin, rich, scalloped, or Alfredo. Another tip is to watch the sodium. High sodium intake is a risk factor for high blood pressure, which can lead to stroke and heart disease. Most of the sodium consumed in the U.S. is from salt added during commercial food processing and preparation, and restaurant fare is some of the saltiest. The Tufts study found that a single full-service restaurant meal often had more than the entire daily recommendation of 2,300 milligrams of sodium. In general, a lot of sodium is found in sauces, dressings, condiments, breads, processed meats, and soups. So instead, try this. For chain restaurants, look for lower sodium options in nutrition information online. Some menus point out lower sodium options using an icon or other indicator. Ask for sauces and condiments on the side and use sparingly. Another tip is save some for later. Most restaurant offerings will far exceed the calories you need for a single meal. According to Tufts researchers, the calories in some restaurant meals, even without beverages, appetizers, or dessert, were higher than an entire day's recommended calorie intake for the average adult. Research has shown that when served more food than they need, people will eat what's on their plate. So try this. Share your meal with someone or save some for tomorrow. Consider packing away half the food you ordered as soon as it arrives in your home. Take advantage of half-order options at restaurants that have them, or consider ordering a healthy appetizer or side as a meal. And this last tip is plan ahead. We don't always make the best decisions when we're hungry. Making healthier choices is easier if you're prepared, so it can be helpful to have a plan. So try this. Take charge of your takeout meals by looking at menus before you decide where to order from and what to choose. Larger chains post nutritional information online, and most non-chain restaurants have online access to menus so you can determine whether that restaurant offers the options you're looking for. Identify the restaurants in your area that have the widest array of delicious-sounding, plant-rich, seafood-based, whole-grain, and lower-sodium dishes. Don't be shy about asking for substitutions to customize your order. And lastly, just ask. If you don't see healthier options on the menu, ask. Restaurants are increasingly flexible when it comes to food preferences. Oftentimes, there are a so-called secret menus for those in the know. If your favorite restaurant doesn't have healthier options, they may begin to offer them if customers ask. So here's what you should try. Don't hesitate to request a healthy swap or different preparation method. You may be surprised how willing restaurants are to cater to your requests. And again, here's the take charge sidebar. To make takeout choices healthier, try these tips. Number one, emphasize plant foods. Look for dishes containing mainly vegetables, beans, and whole grains, and ask to substitute non-starchy veggies in place of less healthy sides. Number two, watch refined carbs. Skip dishes made with lots of refined carbohydrates like white rice and pasta-based dishes, and avoid common double servings like potatoes and a dinner roll or pizza and breadsticks. Request and choose whole grain in place of refined grain dishes. Number three, limit processed meat. Order healthier proteins like seafood, bean, and poultry options. Number four, minimize sodium. Restaurant food can be very high in sodium, so ask for high-sodium items like sauces and dressings on the side, and skip or eat smaller portions of soups and breads. Number five, eat half. Avoid eating more than you need by saving some for another time, choosing smaller options, splitting with a household member, or ordering an appetizer as a meal. Number 6, choose healthier preparations. Grilled or baked is preferable to breaded and fried. Number 7, plan ahead. Check menus and, when available, nutrition information in advance so you can make healthy choices without temptation. And number 8, ask. Many restaurants are willing to make healthy swaps and preparations upon request. And in a related article, this next article is called The Carnivore's Guide to Cutting Back. Whether you cut back, swap out, or substitute, eating less meat is a smart choice. Replacing some meat, especially processed meat, with healthier choices doesn't need to be daunting or difficult. Here's some ways that are dedicated carnivores can cut back. The first one is meat and your health. Consumption of processed meats like ham, bacon, sausage, hot dogs, salami, jerky, and deli meats, including processed turkey, chicken, ham, and beef, is associated with higher risk of cancer, type 2 diabetes, or cardiovascular risk. Whether it is processed meat per se or dietary and lifestyle patterns associated with its intake has yet to be proven, says Dr. Darius Mazafarian, Dean of the Friedman School and Editor-in-Chief of the Tufts Health and Nutrition Letter. Consuming high levels of red meat, primarily beef, pork, veal, and lamb, is also associated with increased risk of heart attack, stroke, diabetes, and some kinds of cancer in many, although not all, scientific studies. The links of unprocessed fresh red meats to health are more modest and controversial, says Dr. Mazafarian. The known environmental impacts and animal rights issues of raising animals for food are also factors many people consider in their dietary choices. Cutting back. If you want to reduce your intake of meat, particularly processed meat, whether it be for health, sustainability, or both, says Alice Lichtenstein, DSC, the professor of nutrition at the Friedman School and executive editor of the Tufts Health and Nutrition Letter. She says choose smaller servings, select meat entrees less often, and or proactively identify alternative foods to replace the meat. So, number 1, reduce serving size. Foods that provide protein should only take up 1/4 of your plate. If your protein is coming from red meat, a 3-ounce serving of most beef or pork products is all the average person needs to satisfy his or her protein requirement for a meal. 3 ounces of meat is about the size of a deck of cards or 3 typical slices of deli meat. Number 2, swap it out. Consciously become aware of how much red meat is in your diet. Is there somewhere you can see substituting with other foods? For example, if eggs or pancakes are tightly linked to bacon in your mind, cut out the processed meat by pairing sautéed mushrooms and onions with the eggs or berries with the pancakes. Or better yet, choose a breakfast of whole grain toast with nut butter and fruit, banana walnut oatmeal, cottage cheese or yogurt parfait, or a low-sugar whole grain cereal instead. Or instead of grabbing a fast food burger for lunch, order a chicken or fish sandwich, preferably not fried, instead, or better yet, a veggie wrap with hummus or a salad. Are deli-style sandwiches your go-to? Tuna or salmon salad make a great sandwich filling. Try an Italian-style tuna with olive oil and spices instead of mayo. Spread some nut butter on whole grain bread and add apple or banana slices. Or ditch the bread altogether for seafood over greens, a whole grain or bean-based salad, or leftovers from last night's healthy dinner. And if beef or pork are dinnertime staples, try fish, seafood, poultry, or vegetarian dishes a few nights a week. And number 3, substitute. Replacing some red meat with plant foods is a logical choice for the health and environment minded. There are many plant-based meat alternatives on the market these days designed to satisfy meat lovers who want to cut back. While these products have a much lower environmental impact than raising beef, we don't know much about their impact on health. meat alternatives tend to be ultra-processed, says Dr. Lichtenstein. While they are an option, replacing animal proteins with whole or minimally processed plant proteins is a better choice at this time. That means trying tofu and learning new ways of including more beans, lentils, and nuts into recipes. Consider replacing some of the meat in a dish with plant foods. For example, have the meat in your favorite chili recipe and add beans or stir beans into prepared chili. Or mix cooked lentils or finely chopped sautéed mushrooms into ground beef for burgers, meatloaf, tacos, or bolognese sauce. Lean ground turkey and chicken, 90% or more, are also a great substitute for ground beef. With a little creativity and willingness to try new things, you can achieve your goals without entirely giving up your favorite foods. And moving on now to another newsletter. This is Consumer Reports on Health. And the first article, 5 Asian Vegetables to Try Now. Tasty and nutritious, they add variety to your plate. If you're looking to mix up your produce repertoire, adding Asian vegetables gives you a healthy and delicious way to do it. Like broccoli, cauliflower, and kale, many of them belong to the cruciferous family and have the same potential to lower cancer and heart disease risk. They also may be easier to find than you think, even if you don't live near an Asian supermarket. Asian vegetables are getting into mainstream grocery stores in recent years, says Zhangling Kong, RDN, founder of nutrition practice Joyful Family in the Boston area, an adjunct faculty at Simmons University. They're also available at online retailers and farmers markets. Here are 5 Asian vegetables to put on your shopping list. The first one is bok choy. And here's the nutrition notes. For a mild-tasting vegetable, this green with crunchy stems and leafy ends packs a lot of benefits. Available in different sizes, all bok choy varieties are members of the cruciferous family. 1 cup cooked also provides about half of your daily need for vision-protecting vitamin A and antioxidant vitamin C. And here's how to use it. Asian families usually stir-fry bok choy with minced garlic and cooking oil, Dr. Kong says. You can also add the veggie to noodle soups. Slice and soak it in three changes of water to get rid of any grit that may be hiding between the leaves before any preparation. The next vegetable is edamame. And the nutrition notes, you may have tried these immature soybeans at sushi restaurants, where they are often served steamed and lightly salted. Just 1/2 cup has 9 grams of protein and 4 grams of fiber, and there's evidence that traditional soy foods like edamame and tofu may lower the risk of breast cancer, according to the American Cancer Society. And here's how to use it. Boil shelled edamame, frozen or fresh, and mix with sesame oil, vinegar, and a little soy sauce for a simple salad, says Asako Miyashita, RDN, a dietitian based in New York with Japanese medical care. Or sauté the beans with garlic, sprinkle with Parmesan, and serve as a side dish. The next vegetable is gailan, and that's spelled G-A-I-L-A-N, gailan. Though it may be called Chinese broccoli or Chinese kale, gailan stands apart from both with thick stems, flat leaves, and small flowerets, and a slightly bitter flavor. Like other crucifers, it contains glucosinolates, compounds that may protect against the cell damage that can cause age-related diseases. Plus, it supplies a hefty dose of the antioxidants beta-carotene and lutein zeaxanthin. So here's how to use it. Like bok choy, gailan works well sautéed or stir-fried. For the perfect texture, Dr. Kong suggests separating the stems from the leaves. Sauté the stems until they're 80% cooked, then add the leaves until soft. Flavor with reduced sodium oyster sauce and garlic, or with ginger and lime sauce, and toss with soba or whole wheat noodles, adding peanuts if you like. The next vegetable is mizuna. That's spelled M-I-Z-U-N-A, mizuna. This leafy cruciferous vegetable with its mild peppery flavor, similar to arugula but less spicy, can be eaten raw or cooked. Either way, it's packed with benefits. You get 15% of your daily need for calcium and 40% of vitamin A in 2 cups of the raw greens. And here's how to use it. Use it in place of arugula in any salad or sauté it in the way you would with spinach. For a Mizuna salad, Dr. Miyashita recommends chopping the greens into 2-inch pieces and mixing with ground sesame seeds, sesame or olive oil, lemon or vinegar, and salt and pepper to taste. And the last vegetable is kabocha, as spelled K-A-B-O-C-H-A. This pumpkin-shaped Japanese squash tastes a little like a sweet potato mixed with chestnut and has a drier texture than butternut squash. Kabocha has a nutty flavor with sweetness. It is great for dessert, Dr. Miyoshito says. And while you can't go wrong with any squash, ounce for ounce, kabocha has fewer calories and carbs and more potassium compared with its common cousin, the butternut squash. And here's how to use it. You can pan fry or roast it, then top with a drizzle of honey or maple syrup with a scoop of plain yogurt for breakfast or dessert, or mash the baked squash and use it as a side dish when you might otherwise use sweet potatoes. And this next article is Healthy Cooking for One or Two, Tips and Kitchen Equipment That Make Meal Prep Quicker. All too often, singles and couples turn to packaged foods and takeout because cooking doesn't seem worth the effort, and who wants to eat leftovers for days? But a diet of restaurant meals and processed food isn't so great for your health and your weight. When you make your own meals, you can control what goes into them. Below, we have tips for taking advantage of small appliances and streamlining meal prep to make cooking at home more manageable. Number one, scale down your oven. In addition to heating up leftovers or a frozen dinner, toaster ovens can roast, bake, broil, and, of course, toast bread. And they get the job done faster than a regular oven because they tend to take less time to preheat. Plus, for those who find it difficult to move things into and out of an oven or struggle with the heft of a hot pan, the countertop height is very helpful. Some models, such as the Breville Smart Oven Air, do double or triple duty in the kitchen because they have features like air frying, convection, and slow cooking. Number two, consider using an air fryer. These can do more than make French fries and chicken nuggets. With just 1 or 2 tablespoons of olive oil, vegetables come out tender yet irresistibly crispy and caramelized. Try asparagus, carrots, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, corn on the cob, and roasted potatoes. You can also use it to cook 1 or 2 servings of fish or chicken. Consumer Reports tests found that the Ninja AF100 air fryer's electronic controls and programmed settings are among the easiest to see and to use. Number three, try grocery store takeout. Prepared supermarket foods sold by weight let you buy just the amount you need so you aren't faced with oversized restaurant portions. To keep your picks healthy, think simple. A piece of broiled salmon or tilapia, roasted veggies, and a whole grain salad, for instance. Or buy just one part of the meal, the fish, say, and make the rest yourself to ease food prep and cut back on cooking time. Ask about sodium counts, though, and if a dish is smothered in gravy, topped with lots of cheese or slick with oil, it's not likely to be a healthy choice. Number four, wake up leftovers. Instead of having the exact same dish 2 days in a row, make extra of 1 or 2 sides when you're making dinner one night and use them in a whole new meal the next day. For instance, roast enough eggplant, onions, tomatoes, and zucchini to use in a pasta dinner and have about 1 cup left over. Serve those extra veggies with a chopped hard-boiled egg on slices of toast, whole grain, baguette the next day. Number five, make staples in batches. Having beans and whole grains on board to use in meals can be a big time saver. A multi-cooker with a pressure cook function, such as the Zavar Lux LCD, allows for hands-off cooking And no need to pre-soak the beans. Cooked beans and grains will keep 4 days in the fridge. And if you've made more than you can eat in that time, you can refreeze them for up to 4 months. The Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics recommends freezing single servings in a muffin tin, then transferring the discs to freezer bags, and you can pull out just what you need. And number 6, buy foods that last. Cabbage, carrots, onions, potatoes, winter squash, apples, and citrus fruit can last for weeks. Eggs will keep 3 to 5 weeks. Hard cheeses such as cheddar and parmesan for months. And we have time for a few ask the experts about, these are questions that are sent in. The first one is, can I get a skin check online and avoid an office visit to the dermatologist? Here's the answer. Full body skin checks shouldn't be done via telemedicine, but your dermatologist may want to check a concerning spot first through photos and or over video. There are some we may be able to determine if that are benign through teledermatology, but if there's any doubt, we will have the patient come in to evaluate it better, says Carrie Kovarik, MD, a professor of dermatology at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. Let your doctor know right away if a spot is rapidly changing or a rash is quickly worsening, she says. Keep in mind that skin cancer smartphone apps can help you remember to do self-checks and can store photos to show your dermatologist, but don't rely on them to diagnose potential cancers, the American Academy of Dermatology says. And one more question. Will I benefit from live bacteria in yogurt? Here's the answer. Judith Thalmeyer, registered dietitian and managing editor of the Tufts Health and Nutrition Letter, answers, probiotics are live microorganisms, typically bacteria and yeasts, that some evidence indicates can confer health benefits when consumed in adequate numbers. Specific strains are used to make yogurts and other fermented foods like kefir, a yogurt drink, a fermented tea kombucha, sauerkraut kimchi, and some cheeses. While there is compelling evidence suggesting probiotics may confer health benefits, including supporting weight loss, blood sugar control, and a healthy blood pressure, it is as yet uncertain which strains of probiotics may be effective, what doses and forms are best, and who might benefit most from their use. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Leslie with Independent Living, and I hope you've enjoyed today's readings from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Able Living, followed by the Women's Hour at 11. Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, Recording Library of West Texas Radio proudly presents the novel which was the basis for the classic film starring James Dean, Elizabeth Taylor, and Rock Hudson. Giant, a novel. Giant is Pulitzer Prize-winning author Edna Ferber's sweeping generational tale of power, love, cattle barons, and oil tycoons set in Texas during the first half of the 20th century. When larger-than-life cattle rancher Jordan Bick Benedict arrives at the family home of sharp-witted but genteel Virginia socialite Leslie Linton to purchase a racehorse, the two are instantly drawn to each other. But for Leslie, falling in love with a Texan was a lot simpler than falling in love with Texas. Upon their arrival at Bick's Ranch, Leslie is confronted not only with the oppressive heat and vastness of Texas, but also by the disturbing inequity between runaway riches and the poverty and racism suffered by the Mexican workers on the ranch. Leslie and Bick's loving union endures against all odds, but a reckoning is coming, and a price will have to be paid. Giant, a novel by Edna Ferber. Weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 77 and cloudy. Tonight, a few showers with a low in the low 70s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 80s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Able Living, and I'm your reader, Kevin, with the Audio Reading Service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Disability Scoop, and now I'll begin with Fine Doubled for Restaurant Boss Who Enslaved Man with Intellectual Disability. This article written by Gerald Albert of the Sun-Times, and it is dateline to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. A Conway man who pled guilty to enslaving a black man with an intellectual disability at his restaurant has to pay him back more than $500,000, a court ruled last month. The Florence District Court did initially order restitution of the full amount of wages and overtime compensation, but did not include, as requested by the government, an additional equal amount as liquidated damages for when minimum wages and overtime compensation have not been paid as required. The government has appealed the initial amount, and now the amount has doubled from roughly $273,000 to around $546,000. Bobby Paul Edwards pled guilty to one count of forced labor in June of 2018 after authorities claimed he had forced a man to work for free between 2009 and 2014 as a cook at J&J Cafeteria. Edwards managed the Conway restaurant, where the victim, identified in court as Jack, had worked since he was 12 years old, according to court documents. He was paid for his duties by the owners until Edwards took over. Once Edwards began managing the restaurant in 2009, he moved Jack into an apartment attached to the restaurant and forced him to work more than 100 hours per week without pay. Not only did Jack work long hours without pay, he was never given a day off, according to court documents. Edwards took advantage of Jack's intellectual disability and kept Jack isolated from his family, threatening to have him arrested and verbally abusing him. Edwards, who is white, beat the victim with a belt, fists, and pots and pans. On one occasion, court documents detail when Jack failed to deliver fried chicken to the buffet as quickly as Edwards had demanded, Edwards dipped metal tongs into hot grease and pressed them to Jack's neck. The result in a burn that fellow employees had to immediately treat. This treatment left Jack physically and psychologically scarred. I felt like I was in prison. Most of the time I felt unsafe, like Bobby could kill me if he wanted, Jack told authorities. I wanted to get out of that place so bad but couldn't think about how I could without being hurt. Edwards also yelled at the victim and used racial slurs to belittle and demean him. After a concerned resident notified state authorities of the defendant's abuse, Jack was removed from the situation in October of 2014. Edwards pled guilty and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. This abusive enslavement of a vulnerable person is shocking, FBI Special Agent in Charge Jody Norris said in a 2019 news release. The FBI is always vigilantly searching for these offenses and stands ready to bring perpetrators to justice and help victims reclaim their lives. We understand human trafficking takes many forms, and we encourage anyone with information related to these crimes to contact the FBI. Our next article, Microsoft Takes Aim at the Disability Divide. This article written by Sean Heasley. Technology giant Microsoft is promising big steps in the coming years to make its products and workplace even more accessible and inclusive to people with disabilities. The company says that in the next 5 years it will roll out a host of accessibility improvements to products, boost disability hiring efforts, and invest in programs to help increase graduation rates among college students with disabilities in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields, among other efforts. This new initiative will bring together every corner of Microsoft's business with a focus on three priorities: spurring the development of more accessible technology across our industry and economy, using this technology to create opportunities for more people with disabilities to enter the workforce, and building a workplace that is more inclusive for people with disabilities, wrote Brad Smith, president of Microsoft, in a recent blog post about the five-year plan to address the disability divide. Already, Microsoft employs a chief accessibility officer and offers an adaptive Xbox controller and other accessible technology. The company also has a hiring program specifically for people with autism. But the new initiative, which will be the focus of Microsoft's annual Ability Summit, will mean an even stronger commitment to inclusion, Smith said. He described accessibility improvements to Microsoft 365 and Microsoft-owned LinkedIn and GitHub, as well as a new fund to help propel innovation to drive down the cost of assistive technology. In addition, Smith indicated that Microsoft will expand its inclusive hiring programs to reach more countries and people with a broader range of disabilities. The company will work with its suppliers to create a culture of accessibility and partner with other businesses and nonprofits to help ease the path to employment for people with disabilities, he said. If there is one thing we have learned from 25 years of work on accessibility at Microsoft, it's this. People with disabilities represent one of the world's largest untapped talent pools, but we all need to act with bolder ambition to empower disabled talent to achieve more, Smith wrote. Our next article, people with IDD are helping providers improve the vaccination experience. This article from the Philadelphia Inquirer, written by Aubrey Whelan. It is Dateline to Philadelphia. When Natasha Black learned that she was eligible to get a COVID-19 vaccine, she said she was excited and hopeful that daily life might finally get back to normal. Black, a member of a self-advocacy group for people with intellectual disabilities, had spent a year away from family, friends, and work. Isolated in her group home in the Pennsylvania suburbs, she missed being able to take walks, chat with neighbors, play a game of pickup soccer. I was staying at home every day. We couldn't do nothing, said Black, who knew she needed to be especially careful not to get coronavirus. I was worried. I was bored. I had some hard times, she said. People with intellectual disabilities are at much higher risk of contracting COVID-19 than the general population, but most were not recommended for higher priority for the vaccination by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But some states did prioritize people with intellectual disabilities, and advocates campaigned for higher prioritization in others. A study published in March by Thomas Jefferson University researchers that looked at more than 64 million patients found that having an intellectual disability was the strongest independent risk factor for contracting COVID-19. People with intellectual disabilities were also more likely to die from the virus. Old age was the only risk factor more connected with death from COVID-19, the study found. What's more, people with intellectual disabilities who were hospitalized with the virus were six times more likely to die. There are a few reasons why intellectual disabilities can make people more vulnerable, said Wendy Ross, a physician, director of Jefferson's Health Center for Autism and Neurodiversity, and one of the study's authors. But people living in communal settings like skilled nursing facilities or suffering from other high-risk health issues are not the only members of the intellectual disability community at higher risk of the virus, she said, since the study also controlled for people in those categories. Some people with intellectual disability have sensory issues that make it harder to wear masks for long periods of time, Ross said. Others who live at home may have therapists and other support staff stopping by, which may expose them to the virus. Many are more likely to use public transportation to get around, another route of exposure. But whatever the reasons behind the heightened risk, Ross said the study showed it was imperative to vaccinate people with intellectual disabilities. After she and other advocates pushed for their patients to be prioritized for vaccination, Philadelphia health officials began to do so in the month of March. By achieving vaccine prioritization was just one part of the fight. The next was making it easier for people like Black and the members of her self-advocacy group to access the vaccine. People with intellectual disabilities tend to be less hesitant. They know they're at risk. They didn't need a study to know that they were at risk. They live it every day, said Ross. But our goal is not really to convince people to get vaccinated. Our goal is to make it accessible and as easy as possible. Ross and other Jefferson physicians met with self-advocates like Black, whose group is run by Carousel Connections, a Philadelphia-area training and support program for people with disabilities. In focus groups, Black and others spoke about how to make the vaccination experience easier. Headphones, that's one of my calming tools, Black said. Others requested sunglasses to help deal with light sensitivity, fidget devices to distract them, or shot blocker discs, devices that sometimes used to lessen the pain of injections. Ross and her colleagues also recommended that vaccinators spend a bit more time with patients with intellectual disabilities. The advice focus group members gave was advice everyone could benefit from, Ross said. What you see underlying is just be nice to me and be positive and encouraging. Distract me. Ask if I have a favorite song. Tell me I'm doing a good job. Who doesn't benefit from all these things? Members of Carousel Connections self-advocacy group who had already been vaccinated said they were looking forward to returning to some kind of normalcy. When I heard about the vaccine, I was ready to get it. I can't wait to hang out with people, said Gerard Hasen, who works in maintenance and landscaping at a school in the suburbs. His advice for getting the shot? Don't be nervous. The group led by Carousel Connections program director Amy McCann discussed their worries about contracting the virus, how they might get the vaccine, and what to expect when their turn did come. Not knowing when they could get it was really hard, McCann said. We talked about why hospital workers went first and about waiting our turn. And with Dr. Ross, we really helped to advocate why our community was in need of it also. Owen Ahern Browning, another self-advocacy group member, said he's still nervous about contracting the virus, even after his vaccine. I wear a mask. I wash my hands. I stay my distance, he said. I'm still scared of the virus. He said talking with family members about how he feels has helped. He is looking forward to everything he can do now that he's vaccinated. Black, who worked three jobs before the pandemic, found herself at home all day as pandemic lockdowns began. It was an abrupt and sometimes rocky adjustment, but she was able to get vaccinated at her group home recently. I'm looking forward to being with my family, and not just my family. I can't wait to go to work when this whole thing is over, she said. Ross said Jefferson physicians are working to vaccinate people with intellectual disabilities inside and outside their health network, essentially anyone who reaches out for an appointment, as well as their caregivers, and implementing the recommendations from the focus groups. They're also advising larger vaccination sites that are geared toward the general public so that they can better accommodate neurodiverse individuals. What we'd like to see for them is that all of them have some training or education, she said. Maybe the first hours of the day can be reserved for this population or be scheduled slower. They don't have to change everything, but we do feel strongly that everyone should have some background on this population. Next article, written by Ray Brewer of the Las Vegas Sun, and it's entitled Special Educator Named National Teacher of the Year. Las Vegas special education teacher Juliana Ertebe was named the National Teacher of the Year by the Council of Chief State School Officials. Ertebe received a surprise visit from First Lady Jill Biden, herself an educator, that aired on CBS this morning. Biden brought the new National Teacher of the Year a bouquet of flowers and a thank you letter from the president. Ertebe teaches pre-kindergarten through fifth grade at Kermit R. Booker Sr. Innovative Elementary School, where she is credited with developing strategies to meet the students' academic, social, emotional, and behavioral needs, according to a news release. She is the first Nevada teacher to win the award, officials said. I am strongly committed to leveraging our collective power to build educational spaces where all children may thrive, Ertebe said in a statement. By centering the strengths of our children and families, we create more just systems for all students, valuing their diverse cultural, linguistic, cognitive, and experiential gifts. Ertebe has spent 11 years at the school, where she's affectionately known as Ms. Earth, for her dedication to beautify the campus and community gardens tended to by the student-led garden gnomies. The council identifies exceptional teachers across the country, recognizes their effective work in the classroom, engages them in a year of professional learning, amplifies their voices, and empowers them to participate in policy discussions at the state and national levels, according to the news release. Juliana Ertebe exemplifies the dedication, creativity, and heart teachers bring to their students and communities, Carissa Moffitt-Miller, the council's chief executive officer, said in a statement. Ertebe is the council's first Latina National Teacher of the Year since at least 2005, officials said. Juliana is a dedicated educator who has fostered growth in her students and a greater connection with her community through her innovative school garden program, the selection committee wrote. She aims to lift up others, a true example of a teacher with an asset mindset who aims to help people see their own strengths. The next article, written by Michelle Dement, and it is titled Stimulus Funds Earmarked for Disability Services Remain in Limbo. Nearly 2 months after federal lawmakers approved billions in extra spending on disability services, advocates say the money is going unspent because states don't know how it can be used. The funding was part of a $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package signed by President Joe Biden in March. The law included $12.67 billion for Medicaid home and community-based services in the form of a 10% rise in the federal government's share of spending on the program between April 2021 in March 2022. But more than a month after the funds became available, states remain reluctant to tap the money without guidance from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. That's because states must spend Medicaid dollars and then seek reimbursement from the federal government. So advocates say states are worried that they could be on the hook for the extra spending if they misstep and allocate funds for something outside of what CMS deems an allowable use. Whether states want to use the money for hazard pay, for direct support professionals, or to make transitions out of a large congregate settings, states aren't willing to take a risk until they get a guidance from the CMS, said Nicole Jorwick, Senior Director of the Public Policy at the ARC. The long-set funds represent the first major investment in the disability services system since the pandemic began more than a year ago. In that time, disability providers have struggled to stay afloat amid rising costs for personal protective equipment, COVID-19 testing, cleaning supplies, and other items, while also facing reduced revenues as programs were forced to close or participation declined. Now that they finally won a slice of federal COVID-19 relief, however, people with disabilities and service providers are continuing to languish. There are people all over the country who have been waiting for programs to reopen, Jorwick said. They're going to keep waiting because states need to know how they can use this money, and states need to know that they're going to get reimbursed. Complicating matters is that state Medicaid programs may need approvals from their legislatures to make use of the extra dollars. Due to the time constraints of state legislative sessions, many self-advocates and providers are having to pressure their states to commit the money to DSP wages, benefits, and other essentials, while states are simply waiting to hear from CMS, said Sarah Meek, Senior Director of Legislative Affairs at the American Network of Community Options and Resources, or ANCOR, which represents disability service providers across the nation. There is a lot of worry that the money won't actually get to people receiving HCBS and their DSPs as Congress intended if CMS guidance is not released soon. The CMS spokesperson told Disability Scoop that their agency is working to release guidance as soon as feasible. We understand how important it is that states receive this guidance as soon as possible to inform their strategies for investing the increased funding so that the beneficiaries with long-term services and supports needs receive the assistance required to live in the setting of their choice, the spokesperson said. In the meantime, CMS encourages states to be collaborating with their stakeholders to understand their top priorities for strengthening home and community-based service systems. The next article, written by Sean Heasley, Elon Musk says he has Asperger's. The billionaire behind Tesla and SpaceX says he's on the autism spectrum. While hosting Saturday Night Live recently, Elon Musk said he has Asperger's syndrome. I'm actually making history tonight as the first person with Asperger's to host Saturday Night Live, or at least the first to admit it, Musk said in his monologue. So I won't make a lot of eye contact with the cast tonight, but don't worry, I'm pretty good at running human in emulation mode. During the appearance, Musk made light of his monotone voice and his propensity to say things that don't go over well. I know I sometimes say or post strange things, but that's just how my brain works, he said. To anyone I've offended, I just want to say I reinvented electric cars and I'm sending people to Mars in a rocket ship. Did you think I was going to be a chill, normal dude? The diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome, a high-functioning form of autism, was eliminated by the American Psychiatric Association in 2013 with the introduction of the fifth edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. At that time, Asperger's was folded into a broader diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder, with clinicians specifying a level of severity. Nonetheless, many people on the spectrum continue to identify with Asperger's label. Next article, written by Bethany Au of the Philadelphia Inquirer, and it's entitled, Children Are Waiting Longer in the ER for Mental Health Care, Study Finds. COVID-19 has cast a spotlight on the shortages of mental health resources, especially for children and adolescents, but problems of accessing care have been increasing for years. A new study published this month in the journal Pediatrics found children who visited emergency departments for mental health crises in 2015 were more likely to experience prolonged wait times for care than they were in the previous decade. Researchers analyzed the length of stay for 36,125 patients ages 16 to 17 visiting a pediatric emergency department between 2005 and 2015. Using the National Hospitality Ambulatory Medical Care Survey. Researchers categorized visits into wait time increments, more than 6 hours, more than 12 hours, or more than 24 hours. The length of the stay for mental health visits were then compared with non-mental health emergency department visits. In the last decades, they found that the rate of mental health visits that lasted for more than 6 hours increased from 16% to 25%, compared with non-mental health visits, which may remain stable. I think that the delay for children waiting in the emergency department is to be discharged to a psychiatric facility or home to the community represents our mental health system coming to a head, a boiling point, said Catherine Nash, lead author of the study and a fellow in the National Clinician Scholars Program at the Yale School of Medicine. It's a proxy indicator of poor access. Nash said an emergency department can be traumatic for a child going through a mental health crisis because there is a lot of noise and chaos, especially in emergency rooms tailored for adults. It's the opposite of therapeutic, she said. There is also a lack of consistency in the providers and nurses caring for you, and every hour you spend waiting there takes away from care. The issue is compounded by a rise in pediatric mental health emergency department visits, especially during the pandemic, as well as a shortage in child psychiatrists in most hospitals located in high-demand urban areas, said Hassan Meeman, a child psychiatrist in private practice in Princeton, New Jersey, who was not involved in the study. In the Philadelphia area, hospitals have struggled to place children and adolescents into psychiatric wards during the pandemic because of a shortage of beds. At Abington Hospital Jefferson Health, the average wait for pediatric patients seeking mental health care through the emergency department doubled from just under 100 hours last March to nearly 200 hours by the end of the year. In urban areas, there's an underallocation of resources, Memon said. Oftentimes, there's no child psychiatrist available in the ER. Not every hospital's mental health department has a child psychiatrist. There's underinvestment in mental health when it comes to kids, so the ER winds up being kind of a catch-all. In the new study, researchers found that mental health visits had higher rates of extended length of stays than non-mental health visits. 21.2% of mental health visits lasted longer than 6 hours, compared with 4.8% of non-mental health visits, and 7.7% of mental health visits lasted longer than 12 hours, compared with 1.2% of non-mental health visits. Often an adolescent patient visiting the emergency department for mental health reasons will have stable vital signs, so they're not prioritized by triage scale, Memon said. It doesn't look like anything is going to happen to them, even if they're having a panic attack, which feels like having a heart attack, he said. People with mental health conditions usually get taken care of last because of that. Researchers also found that Latino children are nearly 3 times more likely to experience delays in care than white children. It's not yet clear why that disparity exists, but Nash suspects it's because language barriers can make evaluations in the emergency department a longer process. Placements into a facility with appropriate background services can be more challenging as well, since there's a dearth of Spanish-speaking pediatric psychiatric facilities, she said. In the emergency room, if we had better translated assessment tools and a standardized form in Spanish, combined with telemedicine, we could address concerns in a more effective way, Memon said. Nash said she was surprised by the study's findings, especially since the issue of extended waits for mental health care has drawn national attention in recent years from the National Association for Healthcare Quality and researchers. I was hoping that we had improved in the last 2 decades, but that take-home message is that it's getting worse, she said. We need to get more creative about how to provide mental health care in the community. We don't just need more mental health providers, but we need people with diversity in training, language, and background. It's on us to make a system of care to address patients who are not English proficient. Memon said that addressing underinvestment in pediatric mental health is crucial to improving access, increasing funding for the school preventative programs, and parenting classes that could decrease the burden on the current mental health system, he said. We know the solutions, he said. We basically just need to address them. We need to invest in these kids' futures and in them. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Kevin with Able Living. Hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Center Solutions Podcast, followed by the Noon Book Hour at 12. On this week's Texas Monthly Archives, we're reading articles featuring the world-famous Chicken Ranch. So we're following in that same theme with our audio-described movie, Saturday Night.
Texas has a whorehouse in it.
Still have mercy on our town.
It wasn't long before the place became one of the better-known pleasure palaces in all of Texas. So much so that the fellers who visited during World War I sent their sons back in World War II. The hospitality and friendliness never changed, and neither did Miss Woola Jean's strict set of rules. She liked her ladies, as she called them, to treat her customers real good, but never in an unladylike way. It was only during the Hoover Depression that the little house had a spell of tough times. Miss Woola Jean put in a jukebox to spark up business, but it wasn't always easy in them days to come up with hard cash.
Well, you just keep that in the bag and I'll take it out back as soon as we're finished.
So for a while, as the story goes, the girls begin accepting poultry in trade, and that's how the place got its name, the Chicken Ranch. Of course, if you grew up anywhere in Texas, you knew at an early age they were selling something out there.
It's just a Billy Swat, no time country place. Nothing too high tone. Just lots of goodwill and maybe one small thrill, but there's nothing dirty going on.
The public has a right to know what is going on out there and what kind of payoff you're accepting to protect that notorious house of ill repute.
You're standing in Lanville County, which by my figuring is about 100 miles west of that stinkhole you call Houston. So I can't see it's any of your business what goes on out here.
Oh, yeah?
No sawed-off little pecker is going to accuse me of taking a bribe and live to tell about it. Because I wear the badge in this damn county.
So get out of here, you damn wig-wearing, citified son of a...
Governor, do you plan to take action against the Chicken Ranch?
I love to dance a little sidestep. Now they see me, now they don't. I've come and gone and... I love to sweep around a wide step. Cut a little swath and leave the people alone.
So you know how hard this is for me to say. I love you. Will you marry me?
Oh, Ed Earl, I've loved you since I was 16 years old. But I've thought about this for a long time. And as much as I'd love for it to work, I know deep down in my heart it ain't never gonna be.
And I will always love you. I will always love you.
Dolly Parton, Burt Reynolds, Jem Nabors, and Dom DeLuise star in the audio-described musical The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Yeehaw! Everyone considered him a coward of the county. He'd never stood one single time to prove the county wrong. His mama named him Tommy, but folks just called him Yellow. Something always told me they were reading Tommy wrong. He was only 10 years old when his daddy died in prison. I looked after Tommy, 'cause he was my brother's son. I still recall the final words my brother said to Tommy. Son, my life is over, but yours has just begun.
Promise me, son, not to do the things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can. It won't mean you're weak. Turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man.
There's someone for everyone, and Tommy's love was Becky. In her arms he didn't have to prove he was a man. One day while he was working, the Gatlin boys came calling. They took turns at Becky. and there was three of them. Tommy opened up the door and saw his Becky crying. The torn dress, the shattered look was more than he could stand. He reached above the fireplace and took down his daddy's picture. As his tears fell on his daddy's face, he heard these words again. Promise me, son, not to do the things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can. Now it won't mean you're weak if you turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man. The Gatlin boys just laughed at him when he walked into the bar room. One of them got up and met him halfway across the floor. When Tommy turned around, they said, hey, look, old Yellow's leaving. But you could have heard a pin drop when Tommy stopped and locked the door. 20 years of crawling was bottled up inside him. He wasn't holding nothing back, he let him have it all. When Tommy left the bar room, not a Gatlin boy was standing. He said, this one's for Becky, as he watched the last one fall. And I heard him say, I promised your dad not to do the things you've done. I'll walk away from trouble when I can. Now please don't think I'm weak, I didn't turn the other cheek. And Papa, I sure hope you understand. Sometimes you gotta fight when you're a man.